Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Thank you for joining us in this, the latest edition of the OIS podcast series. My name is David Ledesma. I am a Distinguished Research Fellow at the Institute. I'm today joined by Agnieszka Asson, who is a Senior Visiting Research Fellow at the OIS, and Manuel Calvo-Diaz, who is Energy and Environment Director of the Naturgy Foundation. And we're here today to discuss the paper on international gas contracts that is published in November 2022 by the OIES. Now, just to timestamp this recording in an ever-changing world, we're recording this podcast on the morning of Thursday, the 10th of November, 2022. Agnieszka Manuel, it's great to have you here on the OIS podcast series. Now, can I perhaps start with you, Manuel, if I can? Now, could you perhaps say a few words about the Naturgy Foundation and why the Foundation thinks that this is a relevant theme at this particular time?
Thank you very much, David, and thank you very much, Agnes, for this invitation. And hello to all of you listen to us today. Naturgy Foundation is a non-for-profit institution. It's based in Spain, and it's part of the Naturgy Energy Group, whose activities are fundamentally divided in three main areas, always related to the world of energy. This is relevant. The first area of activity is related and directed towards social aspects, we will say, focusing on helping the most vulnerable and trying to help them to improve their conditions of life, always in what is related to energy, as I mentioned before. The second area of the Naturgy Foundation activities is aimed at the education of the youngest, with the aim that from an early age, they become familiar with the world of energy and aware of its relevance for the development of society. We think that it is really, really relevant. And the third area of activity, which is the one that brings us here today, aims to generate a serious debate based on knowledge and realities about the most relevant issues related to energy, environmental issues, and sustainability. We think that this is really needed in our society nowadays. And to promote this debate, as it cannot be otherwise, we turn to the real experts in the field that we are dealing with. As regard the first part, topics of interest. It is clear that the supply of natural gas in its various forms, LNG or pipeline gas, is at the heart of the debate and decisions that are being considered in Europe and all around the world. And we believe that helping to understand a little better how this kind of complicated sometimes supply contracts was not only interesting, but sometimes also necessary to be consistent later in the decisions to be taken. And as for the second part, to resort to experts to generate a serious and knowledge-based debate, for us, this is really, really relevant. The Oxford Institute for Energy Studies is an institution that brings together all the virtues. And after a few months of work, here we are with a document that undoubtedly provides great value, and which I'm sure that it will help to expand knowledge about this subject, about the supply gas contracts. And as I told you, I think that it's something that is really needed, nowadays.
Manuel, thank you very much for that introduction. Having read the document, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think there's some very valuable information there for our listeners to be able to listen to. And just to mention, by the way, also, you know, the OIS will be running, together with the Naturgy Foundation, a webinar on Monday, the 28th of November, to discuss it further. So, and we'll be sending information out and putting that out on our website. Well, look, Agnieszka, why did I come to you to talk about kind of the paper itself? Because in the paper, you focus on long-term contracts. So could you perhaps explain to our listeners why and how those contracts have evolved over time?
I focus on long-term contracts because they have underpinned the development of international gas industry from the early days. We have seen the emergence of other contract forms in the meantime. We have master sales agreements for spot transactions. But despite the growing relevance of those alternatives, long-term contracts remain the key contractual instruments for international gas and LNG sales. This year, in fact, we see a particularly strong contracting activity in the energy sector with the resurgence of long-term contracts exceeding 15 years. So the key takeaway here is that long-term contracts are here to stay, Those long-term contracts have evolved over time. They started as inflexible arrangements and they have become more flexible, generally speaking, over the years. We now have a greater diversity in terms of pricing mechanism. There is destination flexibility in LNG contracts. And there are also novel considerations that we'll discuss today, such as those related to the emerging decarbonization requirements.
Yes, certainly. We have seen considerable changes over time, certainly as long as I've been in the business on long-term contracts. And I know we're going to explore some of those later in this podcast. But, you know, you have discussed that, you know, there are parties have different commercial choices. So my question perhaps is, you know, why does the contract price tend to be the most troublesome contract component then?
Well, that's a good question. If parties disagree on the contract price, they are in trouble. And parties are well aware of the importance of that contract element. They spend significant time negotiating the price formula. But in practice, only time will tell whether what the parties have agreed on will be workable in the long run. And a lot can change during the long lifetime of a contract, let's say within 20 years. There will be structural changes in energy markets, domestic market of the buyer, for example. There will be changes to global market fundamentals. There will be market disruptions from time to time. And parties need to prepare for those changes. And at some point, contract price could become untenable to either buyer or seller. Then the affected party will request the renegotiation of that price. And the contracts will stipulate more or less generous conditions for that. Some contracts will not even have any contractual basis for a price review. So depending on the wording of the contract and depending on the commercial relationship, there could be trouble indeed, and there could be disputes between the parties. There could be some cracks on the long-term relationship.
Now, Agnieszka, you know, that said, you know, currency-related provisions have recently come into the spotlight, you know. So to what extent is the ruble gas payment mechanism applicable to international gas contracts then?
Well, the scope of application for the ruble gas payment mechanism is defined in the decree establishing special procedure for payments for Russian gas. The decree was signed by President Putin in March this year. And in a nutshell, it stipulates ruble payments for gas delivered to buyers from unfriendly countries. And that applies to deliveries executed after 1st April of this year. So far, the scope of application is limited to pipeline gas. And the affected buyers are mainly from the EU. But the question of the extension of that mechanism to LNG contracts remains a possibility.
Now, in the paper, you know, International Gas Contracts, you highlight the kind of greenhouse gas or GHG emissions profile as a novel dimension of quality specification provisions. Now, what is the practical relevance of this aspect then?
Well, that's a hugely relevant aspect. We have seen the emergence of new notions of responsibly sourced gas or certified gas. We see the expansion of GHG verified LNG cargoes. And those considerations of GHG emissions transparency and mitigation are increasingly important in the context of long-term contracts. Parties will need to prepare for that. And one of the tasks that lies ahead of them is how to define GHG emissions profile within the contract structure. So gas quality and or LNG quality specification provisions that determine chemical composition and other aspects of that quality will be the right place for that. And here the key challenge for the parties will be to define liability or deliveries that fail to meet the required specification in terms of the emissions profile of gas or LNG delivered under the contract. The parties will need to define what will be the liability for that delivery, what will be the rights and obligations of the parties, whether the buyer will have, let's say, termination rights in the event of a prolonged failure to meet the required specification under the contract.
Now, Agnieszka, in parallel to kind of negotiating specific commercial aspects of the deal, parties to a long-term gas and energy contracts really do need to take a long-term outlook in anticipation of market changes that actually may affect their kind of their long-term contractual relationship that we've been talking about. So how does this work in practice? You know, how can parties to long-term contracts actually mitigate their exposure to long-term market changes?
The long-term outlook is crucial, and this works in combination with other commercial choices that the parties would make. And that long-term outlook is, I believe, the defining characteristic of long-term contracts. As I said before, a lot can change during the life of the contract. Parties need to prepare for that. And in order to be ready to face changing market circumstances, the parties in the first place will discuss the conditions for the renegotiation of the contract price. In some circumstances, the parties will go beyond that and they will incorporate a broader contract reopener mechanism. And that mechanism could serve most forcefully, I believe, as a risk mitigation mechanism, because this allows to recalibrate contract terms more comprehensively in line with changing market circumstances. And those circumstances are not only likely to change, but they will inevitably change, especially as the market will need to respond to the emerging decarbonization requirements. So more importantly, more important than ever, it is to have the contractual basis for any reopening of the contract terms that could be affected.
Agnieszka, in reality, it's a changing world, okay? Who could have foresaw the events that have put Europe into turmoil over the last few months? So on one hand, you're talking about a long-term contract that's going to underpin financing. It's going to have to be relatively have strict and firm with decent contract terms. On the other hand, you're saying we need to be ready to change in the future. How do you balance those two then?
That's the crux of the question. That's the key difficulty when one needs to balance flexibility with stability. And this is, I believe, the guiding principle that the parties will have in contract negotiations. On one hand, the seller or the lenders will require security. On the other hand, the buyer will request some flexibility arrangements in terms of volume or destination in the context of LNG. Let's say, so that balance to strike, that's a very case-specific exercise. So that will simply depend on the parties and their negotiating strength and their negotiating positions.
But you mentioned the balance has got to be struck. Isn't this also a matter of relationships? I've worked in Asia for many years, and having a buyer-seller relationship on a long term is actually key to underpinning those agreements. Do you think it's still the case as we see increased kind of trading and short-term mentality in LNG contracts?
That's still the case that the LNG industry in particular is a relationship-based business. But on the other hand, due to the emergence of new players, we see increasingly that both buyers and sellers demand more protection in their contracts, more legal protection. And that in turn translates into a more robust dispute resolution mechanism that suggests that some of disputes that arise under those contracts will be brought to arbitration. And this effectively changes that original traditional relationship basis origin of the industry. So we see more disputes certainly happening right now, and we will likely see more disputes in the future.
Now, one of the key clauses, of course, in a contract that relieves the parties of the obligations is the force majeure clause. And, you have referred in the paper to an exponential surge in force majeure notices from buyers and sellers. So, what are the relevant examples and consequences of such notices?
Well, that's an interesting question that you ask. The force majeure route used to be taken very sparingly in the industry in the past. Now we see that exponential surge. And some force majeure notices filed by buyers and sellers have been reported, but most of them are confidential. So in terms of the examples that are in the public domain, the most recent one will be the force majeure notice filed by Gazprom. But generally, we see that the industry is preparing for facing the force majeure risk in a much more broader sense than it used to be the case in the past. So force majeure clauses, as we see them in the contracts, they used to be in the contracts, but they were very rarely triggered. Now we see that they are in the spotlight, and as market uncertainty and volatility persists, then there could be even greater scope for its use in the future.
Now, force majeure disputes, of course, are but one example. There are many types of disputes under international gas contracts, and disputes that arise from time to time are part of really the commercial reality of every long-term contract, as you say in your paper. So how are those disputes resolved in practice? What is a multi-tiered dispute resolution approach that you refer to, and why can it benefit the parties?
Well, we mentioned the relationship-based culture, and this translates into the fact that disputes are resolved in negotiations as the first response mechanism. If the dispute will arise, the parties will negotiate by themselves without involving any external participants. But if those negotiations fail, the contract will typically stipulate the second and more formal step. And that will be, in most cases, recourse to arbitration. Then the arbitrator or the panel of arbitrators will render a decision that will be final and binding on the parties. What we see, though, is the growing role of a multi-tiered dispute resolution, as you mentioned. So in essence, a multi-step approach to dispute resolution, a more comprehensive integrated dispute resolution strategy that combines various dispute resolution forms in the most efficient manner. So that could be, let's say, recourse to mediation after the failure to agree in negotiations before submitting the case to arbitration. That could be also a greater use of expert determination, especially for technical issues, because generally speaking, expert determination is more efficient than arbitration. There are also several ways of improving efficiency of arbitration as a process. So altogether, we see a greater emphasis on savings and a greater emphasis on reaching the agreement or the decision of an external decision maker, possibly fast. And this is, I believe, linked to the surge in disputes that we are seeing now. And this is truly an unprecedented number of disputes in the gas industry.
So as we get to the end of this podcast, listeners know I like to kind of try to ask a kind of forward-looking question. So, Agnieszka, why did I start with you, What do you think the key challenges are that lie ahead for international gas contracts?
The key immediate challenge, I believe, is the need to navigate the impact of the ongoing war in Ukraine on performance under gas contracts. Here we have a number of disputes that are pending as we speak. There will be disputes related to gas supply interruptions. There will be force majeure notices, price review requests. There will be very complex dispute settings that combine, for example, force majeure notices and price review requests. So the key challenge will be then to resolve those disputes and to restore some business relationships that might have been distorted due to a variety of reasons. And you mentioned, David, the volatility of the markets, and this is the reality right now. So the immediate challenge, in other words, will be to avoid disputes wherever possible or to resolve them if they have already arisen. The key long-term challenge for the industry will be, though, to respond to the requirements of decarbonization, to prepare the existing contracts or recently signed contracts for the reality of new regulatory requirements, but also to come up with novel contract structures that incorporate GHG emissions transparency or take the next step and also incorporate certain mitigation measures into their structure. And this is the brave new world for long-term contracts and for LNG contracts and gas contracts as well, to incorporate that GHG emissions profile. And I believe we'll see a greater differentiation in the market in terms of the approaches that are taken to the issue. So a lot of challenges ahead of the contracts.
And I think also, challenges are exciting. So there's a lot of changes have to take place. And I think it comes back also to some of the discussion we were having earlier on about buyers and sellers having to work together to be able to manage these in the changing world. Well, Emmanuel, why did I come back to you, if I may, for the last word on today's podcast? What is your outlook in the international contracts arena?
Well, first of all, thank you very much, all of you, again. But as I said at the beginning, our objective as the Naturgy Foundation is to promote this debate by experts. And as Agnes said, that the document said, and it seems that it's clear that this is a very relevant issue. We talk about security of supply, we talk about competitiveness, and it seems to be clear also that the long-term contracts in the different modalities must play a very important and relevant role in the future with the variations that may occur and that the study mentions. Agnes talked about flexibility, price and volumes and destiny, protection, disputes, volatility. So there will be changes, but at the end, the long-term contracts will be there if we talk about security supply and competitiveness. This long-term vision must also, that's the great challenge, also compatible with the energy transition, which you talk about the emissions, and it will be key. But I think that also with the protection of the most vulnerable citizens, as well as dealing with this, we all hope this short-term situation that we are dealing with now with Russia and Ukraine. But in any case, all of these things represents a great challenge for the future. And taking into account this great challenge and all these uncertainties that we have to deal with, I think it's necessary to understand as much as possible how this so globalized market works, and sometimes we think that then that is not properly understood. So again, I would like to thank all of you for this work, and I think that it will help a lot in this with this aim of trying people to understand a little better the issue.
Well, Manuel, thank you very much indeed for that insight. And as I mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, the OAS and the Naturgy Foundation will be running a webinar on Monday, the 28th of November, Key Challenges of International Gas Contracts, Flexibility, Security and Decarbonisation. So Agnieszka and Manuel, thank you very much for your time today and the points that build on the paper, International Gas Contracts, that's recently been published. I hope you've enjoyed listening to this podcast. Thank you and goodbye to everyone.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our energy transition, gas, oil, electricity, or China research programs, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.